Good evening, everyone. This is Yusada Kono Kamada. This is that. I am joined tonight, as always, by PLAN, and we also have some special guests with us. We're actually live tonight from Elemental Healing in Charlotte, North Carolina, where we have begun holding Charlotte sessions again. And I have some of our core council members for the Shambhala Center with me tonight so that we can have some actual people asking questions. So we have Linda, Megan, and Timothy with us this evening. Say hi, everyone.
Hello.
Lovely, lovely. So as always, we're going to get started with a clearing. So I'll ask everybody, take a nice deep breath. Call yourselves forward as we clear the space for the program. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth the shaft of pure Christ light to surround each one of us listening to this program. I ask that these shafts of light be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them, and I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. PLAN and I place ourselves in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. Because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Let's stay in this space just for an extra minute, okay? I'm feeling called to ask you all to do something for me. Internally, place yourself in service to Spirit so that you may be used as a vessel through your four lower bodies. And let's just hold space for humanity, that we be a conduit so that any disqualified energy that can be transmuted by the violet flame at this time be able to do so and move up and through our physical manifestations in order to do this. I'm going to give us three more chimes, and let's just hold that space for humanity, please. Thank you very much. I want to speak directly to our producer, Don, right now, just in case you happen to hear me. We're getting some interesting BBS radio stuff in our ears. Those of you listening, if you're getting that, that made for an interesting little meditation. Hopefully they're not hearing it, but just so you know, we are getting that on our end. Okay. Very good. So we just had a session here in Charlotte, and it's been quite some time since I have done one. Yeah, hasn't it? It's quite a year and a half or so. Very good. And the energy was really high. So we'll see where tonight's radio program goes. Because I'm already... Okay. PLN, is there anything that you can think of from the last program that, we said we were going to touch on again?
I'll take myself off mute. Okay, looking at the notes... No, we had pretty much everything. There was just that one thing that we spoke about earlier that we didn't, that we were thinking maybe a subject for last week that we never got to.
Okay, so do you want to just go ahead and bring that up now?
Yeah, sure. So we were talking and we were saying that, I was saying that I was noticing that people, you know, we keep saying that you have to look at things as they come up. And one thing that I realized through my whole process that I went through a couple of weekends ago was that I was not allowing myself to be vulnerable to myself. So what I noticed is that people aren't doing that. So when things are coming up, they're not looking at it because they don't even want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
So...
So then tell me what you saw when you saw it, and then what you did when you saw it.
For me, quote unquote personally.
Yes, quote unquote personally.
It was really strange at first because I've been doing this work for a while. You think you are, you know, being vulnerable for yourself. So it was actually very heartbreaking.
Yes. Oh, that's good.
Mm-hmm. To realize that I didn't trust myself to even, you know, as much as I love this work and I see what it does, it kind of also made me feel like I wasn't as committed as I had been telling myself I was.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, it just made me realize that I wasn't committed to myself. I wasn't committed to this work. I wasn't committed to anyone else. And that was really a hard pill to swallow.
Mm-hmm. So I think the greater question here is, why would you trust yourself?
Well, I wouldn't.
That's right. Why wouldn't you?
Why? Because mind. Because I still feel that I'm separate. That because I don't trust God.
Yeah, good. And so let's take it to the roles. Take it to the roles. And tell me why you wouldn't trust yourself.
That's good. Well, I'm constantly setting myself up.
Why?
To prove to myself that I'm separate. That I'm... To prove to myself that I'm going to be abandoned yet again.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So the key point to that is that the lower mind, that ego, plays all the roles. Remember this. It's a big one. It's the seeker, right? But it's the victim. It's the savior. It's the perpetrator, right? It's all of it. If it's all of it, then when you ask the question, why would I trust myself? Well, there's your answer. Why would you trust yourself if you're all of it? So, of course, even the seeker, to a certain point, can only get so far with that level of trust, because sitting underneath it is always the other aspect that says, no, I'm going to take you down too. Yeah?
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. So how do you anticipate getting past that little gem? What did you do?
I actually went into meditation, and what I had asked, because I felt like there was this thing inside of me, and I just wanted it out.
Sounds like an alien baby.
It did. Yeah. I did. I just wanted it out, because I couldn't understand how it, we'll call it it, could do that. How it could, you know, when you're kind of outside of that and you're looking at like everything that it is doing, I wanted it out. And so I went into meditation and I just asked of the masters, you know, like, here I am, I'm totally willing, help me get it out. And it was the most emotional pain, and it was actually physically mm-hmm. painful.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually felt this thing being drawn out, as if from my heart, being like drawn out of me. And I think I've never cried that hard or anything, but I actually physically felt it come out.
Mm-hmm. So just for clarification purposes, recognize it wasn't coming out of your heart, certainly, but from the space around the heart. Yeah, mm-hmm. where all the constriction mm-hmm. occurs.
Yeah.
And that's exactly where it would lift from. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But it was, and you and I were talking the other day, and you had mentioned something about it's just energy. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, yeah, that's what it was. It was an energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's condensed energy. Mm-hmm. Right. So if you think of it this way, your personality, as you know it, is just condensed energy. Right, energy that's been identified with over and over and over. And every time the identification occurs, it gets more condensed, right? This physical world is condensed energy. So yeah, that's really good. So you can see in that piece how subtle. So how long have you been working with me?
Over 3 years.
Okay, so 3 years of very intense work, and certainly PLN had done her own work prior to working with me. So, you know, a very long period of very intense work. And to see that shows you the level of subtlety that you continue to see in your work. It just gets more and more subtle. But that's what the mind is. It's this, like, never-ending. I hate to always go back to the whole onion thing, but that's like what it is, just layer after layer after layer after layer of the mind in its subtleties. And it just doesn't seem to have an ending. And at some point, there's the transcendence that occurs, doesn't occur from within it, right? Because now it sees outside of it. It just kind of sees through the layers, right? The peeling away of the layers is absolutely necessary, but up to a point. And this is the thing, because the mind wants to say, well, I'll just keep digging and I'll just keep digging and I'll just keep digging and I'll get to the bottom of this. Well, there's no bottom, right? There's no bottom, because we aren't here to change it. If we were going to change it, then yeah, you know, you'd keep pushing for the bottom, because there's ultimate change at the bottom when you can't go any further. You're not here to change it. You're here just to see through it. So even from the space of where you were, not to diminish the what you did, calling on the masters, because that's absolutely what they're there for, right? However, if it was seen as not personal, if it was only observed from outside, would that be necessary?
No, because there wouldn't be any attachment to my quote-unquote it.
That's right. Now, certainly the calling on them could absolutely happen, right? So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that if you're there, it means you don't do this. And if you're here, you don't. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is in that moment to just witness it, to be able to witness that the personality was experiencing, seeing within itself that it was incapable of being vulnerable to itself. That wasn't you seeing. You see what I'm saying? Because you're still playing the game in it. Now it's me and I see I'm vulnerable. No. You're not even that. You're not even that. Right? And that's the piece that's so challenging, especially as I look at the four of you, you know, who are more advanced students. That's the piece that gets really challenging. Because what happens is we get trapped in the constant kind of psychoanalysis that goes on that is extremely necessary in the beginning of our work, right? And you find, you know, along the way, the need for the level of processing tapers off. At some point, you don't need it anymore. Once you've seen it, it's done. Unless you want to keep that story rolling, and then that's what the mind is going to do. Oh, I better go process that, right? Well, then you just made it real again, right? Yeah, because at some point, literally, the observer, even at the moment of identification where it could personalize with a story, the observer can catch it and go, oh, it's just energy, right? And see it for what it is. It's just energy. And in that moment, from that level of the observer, there's no attachment anymore, right? Because the reality is it's all divine. It's all divine. I don't care what it looks like. I don't care how negative it does seem to look like, because that is God presenting as the negative to get you to actually see what you refuse to see, right? God has to wake itself up. How's God going to do that? Think about that. God has to wake itself up. Who else is there to wake God up but God, right? And so within identification, if we're holding a certain spot, right, and that's false, it's a gift of God to see the other side, because that gives us the opportunity to see through the whole paradigm that's presenting itself. Does that make sense? You've got a look on your face. Is there a question about that? Any of you?
Actually, I'm sorry, I do. So now you were saying, I see what you're saying, but I think you just put it into perspective, because prior to this, when we used to say it's just energy, it was more like, if you feel something and you're not really, you don't have anything that matches it, right? Then it's just energy. It's not yours. Don't attach to it. But I see what you're saying now, that it's, even when we are attached, it's still just energy.
That's right. Because everything is energy. Everything is energy.
I've recently noticed that for myself, sometimes I feel like I'm in a rat race or in one of those guinea pig wheels, whatever, or mouse wheels, whatever you call them, hamster wheel, thank you. Because it's like I've kind of caught myself chasing after the same thing. And the same thing is to break everything down around me and like have this greater understanding of why this is this way and why this is that way. And it's just this overanalyzing. And then I had to take a step back and say to myself, you are further engaging in the story because you are trying to make everything in life the work. Uh-huh. And really, I just keep playing the same thing over and over again. Uh-huh. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does make sense.
But everything in life is the work. So you're not wrong in that. It's just that the conscious focus doesn't have to be the work. But remember, mind always wants to black and white everything, right? It's always this or that. It's never both. And this is both. As a true seeker, does your life become about the work? Absolutely. Oh my gosh, absolutely. And it needs to at some point. Okay. Where you're so consumed with it that every opportunity you have to see something, you take it. Right? You take it. But it can also function in the reverse. Mm-hmm. And it can also become a crutch or just a further point of identification that you become the, you know, proverbial seeker. And that's all you ever do. And that's where I'm pointing to today. And this is where students like yourselves are really being challenged right now, right? Because you already have, you know, pretty much seen what is the imprint. Once you've really seen the imprint, and not just mentally, once you've experienced the imprint fully, like you've seen it all, right? There comes a point where the processing work just falls away. You just don't need to do it anymore, right? Because why? Because now we're going to pick apart something that you already have seen very clearly doesn't even exist. And then what you're saying there is accurate. Once it's been seen, well, who is it that still needs to engage in the undoing of something that doesn't exist anyway? Right?
I caught myself.
Uh-huh.
Saying, how do we process this?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the beautiful thing there is that you see how that's one level of seeing that's very profound. We go like, oh, but I've already seen that. Like, you know, so you can see where it still comes as the test because maybe there is a piece that hasn't quite been gotten, right? And so it comes back and you have an opportunity to dig deeper. Sure. You also have an opportunity to stand above it. And that's the challenge, that when it comes and you could take it and process it, you know, and sit down and get all deep and dirty with it, it's really not necessary. There's a point at which one recognizes themselves to be outside of that whole story period. It never was me. It's never going to be me. I can't become it if I never was it, right? And all I have to do is stand here and see it for what it is. That's Megan's karma drama. Okay. You know? But you have to have done that deep work first. And it is so important because you never get to that space until you've done that work. Yeah. Because you'll always hide those things from yourself. But yes, it absolutely can. And this is the test, right? This is where it's about you stepping, you know, every day a little more into your mastery. Right? Because remember, it's not that someone who is a master doesn't have things that come and try to grab, because they do. This is a polarized world. If you think you're going to walk through it and not have anything ever grab at you, you know, look at Jesus. He was nailed to a cross. Right? Tell me that's not something grabbing, asking for identification. Right? Exactly. It'll always come. The difference is that the master stands above it, sees it for what it is, right? And then doesn't engage from that level. The master will engage from love, unconditional love. Yeah. and not from a need to have to figure out, you know, why do I do this? Why do I always get stuck in the same thing? And, you know, and it's like, that's like a chasm, that step. And it really is, because it's very strange. You know, when we first have the experiences where you can see the program running, you've identified with it and you can see it. And if it's a big one, right, if it's one of your anchor points, it's going to pull on you really hard, right? And the first time or a few times that you stand here and you watch it, it's excruciating, because everything within that construct of ego just wants you to bite, you know. Oh, come on! You know that pisses you off. Do something about that, right? Do something about that. But something has to be stronger than that, right? And that's where your divine will comes from, right? Or that's where it comes into play. You have the will of God. That first ray is part of your construct, and that's the piece that will carry you through those moments, for as difficult as they feel, right? As seductive as they can feel. Come on, you know you want to judge that person, you know, right? It could be very tempting. The demons that I keep referring back to from the Buddha story, the demons. It's the pictures, those images, right? And they're very seductive, right? And it takes a master to not be seduced by them and to not function from that level. It takes a master to stand above it and not use that story as a means to judge, right? Either someone outside or oneself. You're not here to judge yourself. Who's the self you're judging? The self you're judging is an illusion anyway, so what's the point? Can I see that I screwed up? Sure. Absolutely. Can I make amends with another person when I see that I've screwed up? You better believe it. And what a beautiful thing to do from a space of humility, right? But do I need to judge myself for screwing up in the first place? No. Why? Show me one positive thing that's going to come out of that. If you think the positive thing that's going to come out of it is, well, if I judge myself harshly, then I won't do it again. Oh, please. You'll get addicted to judging yourself harshly. And that will become your new MO. You remember the states of mind that you attach to the strongest, that you have the most emotion behind. Those are the ones that become the most addictive. And those are the ones that become the biggest part of your story. So you got to watch it, because that, people function from very low self-esteem, and they won't even be aware of it, because this is what's constantly back there. All this talk that sits in the background that they don't even recognize, until they really start to look. And then they really witness. Now, some people really witness the negative self-talk, right? People, when you suffer with depression, you're used to negative self-talk, right? You hear it all the time. But a lot of people in the world really don't witness it until they get deeper into their work and they're like, wow, like, I never realized how hard I am on myself. You know, every little thing that comes, now I'm starting to see, like, in the energy, in that moment, you know, I said something to a person and they corrected me in the way I said it. And in that moment, I just felt, boom, there it was, right? I just spiraled. You know, why is she correcting me? Oh, I'm such a loser, right? And that stuff sits there and you're addicted to it. But what positive thing is ever going to come out of that? How does the Christ emerge when the story says, I'm such a loser? Personality is going to be the personality. If it was trained to constantly judge itself as a loser when it gets corrected, well, that's the program. It doesn't have to be changed to be transcended, right? And this is an interesting thing, because psychology will tell you that you should change the story. Is that wrong? No, it's not wrong. Within this construct, it's a very beneficial thing. You know, you suffer from depression and you go to see a psychologist and the psychologist says, you need to start doing affirmations and, you know, we got to change your story. You know, it's important. Your self-talk is important. Let's change it from negative self-talk to positive self-talk. Is there benevolence within that? Well, of course, because within this paradigm, well, yeah, you know, it has its place. But does it do anything really to step you out of the life-death cycle? If you're just changing your polarization from one side to another? Does it get to the root of the polarization? No. But this is what the mind does. It constantly just flips. It's polarized here, and then it flips to this side, and then it'll flip back, and then it'll flip back, and then it'll flip back, and this is just what it does. You know? And then the whole time, there's no conscious connection to that Christ itself at all. There can't be. Yeah, Tim.
You know, for me, for those negative states of mind that I would get into a lot of times, it would feel like I had to, like, win, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so if I just let it go, it felt like cheating. Like, you can't do that. You know, you have to figure this out. You know, so even though I could see I needed to just, like, let it go, like, I couldn't even do that. You know, it's like this battle of always trying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing past that now, but in the beginning, that's the way it felt, like cheating.
Yeah. And I remember very specifically when we started doing Ray work that you said to me, well, that's too easy. Like, that can't be accurate because it's too easy. I'm like, well, why not? You know, and that was it. It's cheating. Yeah, I remember you said that. It feels like it's cheating because it's too easy. Like, well, who says this thing has to be hard? Like, you're the only one making it hard, right? Because on one level, it is so simple. That's the thing about it. When you actually, you know, get to this place that you've truly never left, right? But let's say you experience it as getting there again. That's what's really seen is like, oh, like, oh my gosh, like, but it was so simple. You know, it was right there all the time. And something just couldn't see it, you know. And that's where, like, again, you come back to the innocence of the whole thing. You can't not see the innocence in all of it. You know, for as much as you've been hurt, for as much as you've had horrendous things happen to you in your lifetime, at that moment, you can't not see all of those outside of you who have, quote unquote, hurt you as innocent in their actions, right? And that transforms everything. Because now there's none of this holding them separate anymore. Because I have to hold you out there because you hurt me. And if you hurt me, you deserve to be over there, and I deserve to be over here. And we need a space between us, right? And when you've seen the innocence in all of it, that falls apart. It just falls apart. And now you have an opportunity to actually move forward with the person who may have hurt you from a very clear place. And if you do that, now you have the opportunity to see them in a completely different light, right? Because if they hurt you, you're going to see them based on the pictures, right? The images that say, I remember the hurt. I remember what it felt like. I remember how she acted, that whole thing. And if this piece falls away, now that story doesn't apply anymore. Did it happen? Well, sure, maybe it happened, right? But you're not going to judge the person today based on what happened yesterday, right? Now, remember, this isn't black and white, okay? So even the Christ itself, remember, who can take right action because it sees very objectively, can certainly see the ego running on the other side, right? And will be very aware that, you know, I'm not going to hold anything there anymore. However, if I got re-engaged, chances are it would happen again because that's the programming over there. And that programming isn't going to stop. That person is, you know, functioning from a level of unconsciousness where they're not capable of stopping that. I'm capable, right? But they aren't. So it wouldn't necessarily be in my best interest to re-engage there. See what I'm saying? But you're not holding it against the person anymore. Okay.
Any question about any of that? You. I got four people here and you're all really quiet.
I had something I was going to say, but I don't. It has to do with the,
Do you have it?
Okay. When it comes to, you know, saying that there's nothing to change.
Yes.
Right? If let's say I see the pattern running. I see Megan running. I'm trying to think of an example. But something that would normally trigger her. Mm-hmm. And that's just part of her patterning. Couldn't you consider not engaging a change, like changing something? And the only reason why I say that is because initially when I first started, I was very confused on what you meant by you're not here to change anything. Mm-hmm. You're here to see through it. Mm-hmm. And so if I would not engage in something that was Megan's patterning, mm-hmm. then I would say to myself, I feel like I'm changing something. Like I'm changing me.
Ah, okay.
So the problem is that the identification is still going on that you're Megan.
Wait, what? My brain was like...
And that's the only issue. Within that statement, you're still the identification with Megan is still present.
When I say I'm still changing something?
Yes, because from the level of the Christ itself will function in a way that looks as though change has occurred.
Oh, I see.
But it's not coming from the personal self. So what was changed? Right. What did I think changed? See? And it doesn't mean that the story doesn't still pop up from time to time. Killian's laughing. Why are you laughing?
This is great. Just watching the faces. Like, first it's Megan, and like you see like the boop when it hits her, and she's like, "What?" And then, and then Tim all of a sudden is like, "Oh."
It's like those contagious yawns. I'm like, I get it.
The beauty of having people in front of you. Yeah.
But it's subtle, though.
It's very subtle. It's very subtle. And yes, and it's a very confusing statement to hear. You're not here to change it. You're here to see through it because it doesn't make any sense, especially when you see that change is occurring. And you're going, but you're not, the personal self is not the one making that change. It's coming from heart. So if it comes from heart, was something actually changed? No. That's right. That's right, because you're just functioning from a different level. See? Ah.
This is like that onion analogy where it's just more and more layers.
That's right. More layers. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing right now that's so imperative is to navigate that, right? Because it's really tricky. If the mind gets engaged in it, it just swims in it. Well, I would normally, you know, call the person back, but that would be my pattern. So I probably shouldn't. And then, you know, and it's like this, it turns into this this whole thing, right? So I won't. And then you don't, but then you're still stewing over it. So how does anything really change, right? The thing that will change is in the moment when it's recognized that that would be the pattern. And something says no. And within the no, the energy comes and fights for attention, and it's still no. And it just moves on, right? And then the rest of it just goes, and it just kind of falls away. And then it's done. And now you're not thinking about, should I make a phone call? Should I not make a phone call? Who am I if I make the phone call? You know, what kind of a loser am I if I don't make the phone call? And the whole thing, it just doesn't need to be there. Because what was seen in the moment is the phone call is not right action. This time. Maybe another time it would be. Who's to say, right? Yes?
I have a question. Well, it's a different topic. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's the same thing we talked about before about this infinite onion. So
the divine onion.
Yeah. So if, like, even just now, like, I realize that if it's not me, if I think I'm changing, it's already me identified with me.
Yes.
Then if I didn't think I was identified, but I really was, then how do you know you're not identified anymore and you've transcended this infinite onion?
Transcended the onion.
I'm serious.
Okay.
I loved it.
Restate the core of the question again. If I
if you don't know you're identified, but you really are, and then you discover that you actually have been identified, then how do you know that you've transcended identification? What's so funny? It's a serious question. Did you get it?
Look
at Megan laughing. So yes, this is a beautiful question, actually. It really is. So initially you don't know you're identified because you're unconscious. Then you move into a state of consciousness that's more expanded, and that state of consciousness begins to be aware of its own limitations, so to speak, right? It'll see the identification occurring, right? And all I can tell you is that you will have an experience outside of identification where you wouldn't think of it as identification or non-identification, because neither exists in that space until you pop back into identification. And you see it there. You see the space of non-identification from the space of identification. It does make sense. Does it make sense to all of you? Yeah? Yeah.
Well, it's like the breaking the clouds, because, like, for me, you know, I used to think that if you kind of get into this dark place where it's just like, it's nothing but dark clouds, you know, and I can't see anything but that. But then if there's like one moment where there's like a break in the clouds, you can realize, oh, there's more to this than just what I've been seeing. Mm-hmm. But it takes that one thing to like shift your reality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it seems like that's kind of what you're talking about. There's that some experience where you realize, okay, this is beyond identification.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. And it's unmistakable, you know. It's unmistakable. That is, it's like that thing in the Matrix when they're flying that thing in the over the city, right? And they go out over the clouds and they see the sun for the first time, you know. And Trinity's like, oh, it's so beautiful, you know, like whoever would have known. But there it was the whole time. And yeah, so the experience is the same. That the beauty, even the, just to take it from a level of beauty, the beauty of the world is seen on a level it's never experienced before. And you may be like a real nature lover and you're, you know, your whole life you've been someone who appreciates the beauty of nature. You will move into a state of awareness that sees it in such a more full capacity, you know, that it will even shock you. Like, wow, you know, or to experience color in a more expanded way, you know, that the eyes don't see, but to have the experience of that is like truly amazing, just amazing. And it continues, right? So remember that enlightenment is not a, you know, an ending point. That's the thing where people really get stuck. That to me, in my work, is where Advaita stops just a little short, right? Because Advaita will bring you to that space of the kind of amorphous all that is, and that you are that, and it stops there. But you're more than that. You're more than that. There's so much more going on than just that. Is that a beautiful place to park it? Oh, absolutely. Don't get me wrong. Gorgeous, gorgeous. But there's even more than that. And that's the thing, you know, enlightenment doesn't stop here. It just keeps going and keeps going and keeps going, because God is expanding, right? Infinitely, just infinitely expanding. And you're part of that expansion. And so the love that you are is here to expand, just expand, expand, expand. So you have these experiences and yeah, you come into a level of awareness and then you'll dip back down in again, right? And then you find yourself going, oh, I must have been doing so good because I had that great experience, you know? And now I'm failing again, right? And so the whole story is running again. And then something's going to happen and you're going to have another transcendent experience. And they're beautiful. They come and they give you that peace where you have this goal that you keep pushing for. And it's necessary because let's face it, in this dynamic, if you didn't have it, you'd give up, wouldn't you? Because it's just too hard. If you didn't have those moments of peace, you know, that really were just blissful, you would give up. Because who the hell wants to work that hard, right? Unless you feel like you're getting somewhere. And that's where grace comes in. You know, you are lifted in grace and you're given moments that just transcend your concept of what life is. And that's the piece that gives you that, you know, just keep pushing, because it is hard to keep pushing, especially, you know, to come back to PLN's first thing, when you get to that level and you see that, you know, that's quite a moment. It's quite a moment. And you have to be able to move into the space where you can transcend that, right? Oh, I'm not even vulnerable to me. Well, does that even make sense? From a greater level, does it even make sense? Because truly, what you are is only vulnerable, because there are no barriers to the essence of what you are. None. None. It is eternally vulnerable. And that scares the hell out of people. Well, what do you mean? But you have to recognize it in context, right? So in the context of that being your essence, okay, outside of this paradigm, when that's the essence, the only essence that is existing in your awareness, no one has a barrier anymore. So can it even be considered vulnerability at that point? Because the concept of vulnerability is contingent on something, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Right? In order for it to exist, there has to be an opposite side that says, I'm going to hurt you. Right? So what I'm saying is where you're walking to is the space where the only thing that exists is the space of ultimate vulnerability. And at that point, it stops being vulnerability. It's just the essence of what you are. Because there's no bad guy out there. It doesn't exist. There's nothing out there that would hurt anything. And that is an experience, right? It's an experience. And when I spoke of earlier tonight when we were in live session and I was talking about that experience of realization where one is the light, right? And I spoke of how all-consuming the light is. That's there within it. It's hard to put to words. It's so expanded, and it's just the essence of love that, like, for as much as you've ever felt love before in your lifetime, it's like it takes it and it just blows it up. Like it shatters that. Whatever you thought that was gets just shattered from the light that comes from out of that. You know, if you picture your heart and say, you know, the person you've ever loved the most in your life and that feeling, and if you get in that feeling and you can picture your heart, you know, whatever, imagine there's a light coming from the inside of it that just shatters it open. And that light just goes, pow! And now all you see is light, right? And that's the space that you actually will experience yourself in. And within that space, there is just not even a concept of what it would mean to be vulnerable. Because that's all that there ever could be. There couldn't be a barrier there. Because you literally experience yourself as everything. So if I'm everything, how could there be anything outside of me that would want to hurt me? Right? if I'm everything and everything that exists is this expanded love, who needs to be vulnerable? Right? Now, here in this paradigm, that's part of the trick, is you walk as a vulnerable individual, right? Because to walk with an open heart means that there are those, and their programming is going to run, and they'll take advantage of you if they can, because that's the program, right? And that's their choice. And your job as a master in training, right, is to remain in the space of vulnerability, to love them unconditionally. It doesn't mean you're a doormat. It doesn't mean you don't take right action, because you do. But you don't prejudge them, right, based on what you see could happen. Those are their choices to make. And part of walking that walk of mastery is allowing people to make the choices they're going to make, even if it looks like it's not going to be so good on my side.
Do you also not stop functioning from an open heart too?
Do you not stop what?
Do you also not stop functioning from an open heart? So even when those things happen?
No, you always have an open heart.
Right.
Yep. Always. Always, always, always. Yeah. And that's the challenge, you know, the challenge of our time truly is to walk that walk in the world, knowing, and this is the thing, you know that within this construct you are vulnerable and you will place your trust in people anyway. Yeah. And that's the thing. But you see children do it all the time, don't you? Small children. You'll see dogs do it all the time. A dog can have a master that kicks it. It'll run right back, trusting that the master's going to love it again, right? And a child's the same thing. You can scold a child, and before they have that sense of shame that's kind of built into the programming, they'll come right back and just love you, love you, love you, love you, right? And you can see it with older children. When a parent finally recognizes how horrendous they've been and they you know, come forward to the child and really apologize, and there are tears all over. The child is like right there. It's okay. I love you. I forgive you. I love you, right? That's your nature, okay? And that's where we're here to function from. So as we move into our song for our meditation tonight, let's focus on bringing our attention to our hearts, and let's focus on expanding that space for the next 4 minutes. Our deepest love to all of you for listening, and we'll be back live with you next Thursday night. Much love to you. Good night.